in the sun raw this morning. I was laying down across my bed. When the sun rose this morning, I was laying down across my bed. Now I didn't have nobody to hold my aching head.
What a sad state of affairs. That's Pinetop Perkins with Pinetop's Blues. He's one of my favorite blues men. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we are continuing our focus on the Clinton Foundation today, outside the law, yet shielded by it. The Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation and multiple offshoots it has spawned globally in the years since the foundation's launching have been operating illegally and deceptively as charitable organizations, says former Wall Street financial expert, analyst, and investor Charles Ortel, who has been presenting his findings, the findings of his independent study of the foundation's operations, in an ongoing series right here on Lead Stories. On today's program, we will delve into the paradox of how the Clintons, their foundation, and related charitable organizations, charitable in quote marks, have been able to operate outside the law and yet seem to be shielded by it. Let's start off with a very interesting development here. The Scripps Foundation did a beautiful story. I said beautiful because it was exactly the title, in a way, of the Clinton charities ignoring the law requiring them to disclose millions from foreign donors. That's their headline. It was a six-month effort, and they wrote this story explaining how they found also major, wide discrepancies between what allegedly was taken in the form of, quote, donations, unquote, and what the Clintons reported. But here's some interesting context for that from Hillary Clinton herself. And here's the story, as a matter of fact. Here's a story that summarizes the focus of the Scripps story.
Distorting our elections.
But it's the foreign government dollars that flow through Clinton family charities that critics argue need to be accounted for. Our investigation found two of the charities ignored a New York law and related instructions. John Wunderlich heads the Sunlight Foundation, a political watchdog.
The Clinton Foundation and the associated entities are trying to avoid having to tell the public who's giving them money from, especially foreign governments.
New York law requires charities to publicly name each government that gave contributions and the amount. Yet the Clinton Foundation has never complied for its foreign government donations.
They just list a lump sum total. They don't list each foreign government.
David Nelson is a tax expert and former Regulations and Legislation Committee member with the Council on Foundations.
Clinton Foundation cannot say they're in compliance with New York regulations.
And we also found problems at the Clinton Health Access Initiative. For 2010, it told the IRS it received $26 million in foreign and domestic government grants. But the charity only reported $242,000 in domestic grants to New York, ignoring instructions to make sure the state numbers matched with the IRS, which requires a total number, both foreign and domestic. But in New York, charities must name names and amounts. Over 5 years, we found $225 million in discrepancies between what it reported to the IRS and to New York.
New York state law should be enforced as it's written.
I thank you for joining me today for an important announcement.
New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman just won a lawsuit against Citizens United after the conservative group didn't want to disclose its major donors. He was named to Clinton's Campaign Leadership Council in New York and gave the campaign the maximum personal contribution allowed last year. His office told us the Clinton Foundation is in step with state rules.
I have no idea how to reconcile the letter of the law and the statements from the Attorney General. They seem to be in direct contradiction.
The Clinton Health Access Initiative said that it told Schneiderman's office in the past if it wants to know about the foreign government contributions, it can ask, adding New York has never questioned its way of doing things. The New York AG did not respond to our questions about the discrepancies. Mark Greenblatt, Scripps News in Washington.
Mark Greenblatt recently filed this story, and it again points to huge irregularities with a wide network supporting it and shielding it from close scrutiny. But we have somebody who has no respect for shielding people from scrutiny, and that is our guest today. And he has been doing this series with us, and we are so grateful to have his expertise available to us so readily, Charles Ortel. You can see the documentation for everything that is said here by Charles Ortel at charlesortel.com. Charles, thanks for joining us today.
Wow, it's such a treat to be back on you, Chief. Many thanks. I can't wait to respond to that article.
Well, from what you heard, you might have also picked up echoes of what you've been saying.
Yeah, so let's start with this, you know, the video. I'd be putting that call me sign up, you know, Mr. Greenblatt, call me, man. We need to talk. So first of all, I applaud you on your story, and let's deal with what you've written about, which is the period 2010 forward. In truth, New York law, which is in the specific section of the or the schedule of the filing, it's a form called CHAR 500. And the specific section is called Schedule 4B. And on Schedule 4B, actually, he doesn't get into the weeds quite enough. The rule in New York is that you must reconcile in full detail all of your grants, domestic and foreign, and I have personally checked numerous times with the appropriate authorities in New York myself by email and phone communication. And I've been told that under New York state law, you must indeed reconcile every single government grant. Now, you can't aggregate it. You can't say federal government. Every single grant from a government entity, you've got to identify the entity, its address, the purpose of the grant, and the amount. All has to be laid out in a schedule. And it all needs to tie to a line on the federal form, which is the line for government grants. So in the first instance, what Mr. Greenblatt and Scripps have done is they've concentrated upon the recent period 2010 forward. And they've only really looked at the William J. Clinton, or you know, in theory, the parent company, and this Clinton Health Access Initiative, which is the, in theory, HIV-AIDS fighting enterprise in Massachusetts. And what they haven't done is taken a hard look at other provisions of New York law, which require a filer to produce a comprehensive account. So in other words, if you put out an entity like the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, which in theory incorporates all of these far-flung disparate enterprises, then you've got to fill out the New York form that explains how all these disparate enterprises fit together, and they've never done that properly from 2010 forward. The second thing they may not have checked, which I have checked, the Clinton Health Access Initiative put up on its website something that has subsequently been taken down, which is the actual identities of the donors in 2010, something you don't have to file under federal law, but you do have to file under New York law. That thing is up there. And so the amounts and the identities are up there. And with that, you can then go against and check with the donor disclosures, which I have done. And none of the amounts foot. Another thing you can do is you can go into, there's something called, our federal government has something called a single audit requirement. And that's a pretty tough thing, that if you take more than a certain amount of money, and I forget whether it's $500,000 or $750,000 in that year, from any part of the federal government aggregated together, you must fill out this single audit, and it's posted online, and there's something called an audit clearinghouse. So for the main foundation, its federal employer ID number, which is the key number you need to use, is 31-158-0204. And I'll sound like one of those commercials now. That's 31-158-0204. You don't need to send in postage and handling to get the information. It's free. So you go on that site, and you will find nothing for the main Clinton Foundation. That's because some clerk, whether willingly or unwittingly, entered the number for the Clinton Foundation as 11-158-0204. So if you use that number, you'll find the information. None of the information there puts for 2010 and 11 for the Clinton Foundation. And then for Clinton Health Access Initiative, it's 27-1414-646 is the federal employer identification number, 27-1414-646. Punch that in. That does reconcile for, I think, 12, 13, and 14, but not for 10 and 11. So, you know, Greenblatt hasn't taken it far enough as it concerns 2010, but he's done the world a great service as a Scripps looking at this thing. But the thing that Greenblatt missed, and this is a classic Clinton approach, you know, they get you to focus on something that's really not the problem. The thing he needs to do now is ask, how did they form the Clinton Health Access Initiative, Inc.? You know, did they file the paperwork properly with the federal government to create this entity? And the answer to that question is absolutely not. They filed paperwork, which, of course, is not on their website. The core thing for a foundation of this type is a form on an IRS form called Form 1023, detailed application that lays out, you know, what your history has been, what you plan to do, who's involved, what your financial consequences, many, many pesky questions. All being the questions being the answers being submitted under penalties of perjury. So, you know, the Clinton Foundation makes a huge show on its website of putting up some of these applications, the one for the Parent Foundation, the one for the Global Initiative, but not for this one, not for the Clinton Health Access Initiative, not for Alliance for a Healthier Generation, not for the Bush Clinton Katrina Fund, not for the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund. Not for many other allied funds. None of that stuff is up there. And the reason it's not up there is because it's all fraudulent, riddled with lies and errors. In the case of the Clinton Health Access Initiative, a key question asked is that entity a success or organization? And the answer, the lie on the application, is that it's not. Of course it is. And you won't get that from the Clinton Foundation filings, but you will find it on New York State. That's the New York State Charity Bureau website, where you can look and you can get this information and look at it with your own eyes. And then look at all the press releases filed since 2002 about predecessor entities to Clinton Health Access Initiative that certainly were operating. And look at the audit, in quotes, for Clinton Health Access Initiative, which clearly shows that it took over the operations of a predecessor entity, but it doesn't tell you that that predecessor entity had been illegally constituted. So Mr. Greenblatt has done 6 months of good work. He needs to do, you know, get the top team together. I will save him a tremendous amount of time if he's interested. I'm available through Twitter and through Utrice. And I'm going to reach out to him on Twitter after we're done here and then try to see if his email's on there. What he really needs to do is he needs to go back to 2004. The reason he needs to do that is that what the analysis he's performed for 2010 forward needs to be done from 2004 to 2009. In that period, the same law he's talking about applied. Especially in the period 2004 to 7, Hillary, yesterday we talked about the fact, made a huge show of how this Clinton Foundation has gone above and beyond what anyone else does. Total rubbish. You're required under New York law to lay out, maybe she doesn't know New York law. I mean, she was only one of our senators. She's only one of the smartest lawyers in the world, supposedly. But she doesn't apparently know that under New York law, you have to list this out. And under federal law, you have to list out the number total government grants. Now, why is it that she wouldn't and they wouldn't want to do that? Well, under federal law and under New York law, you have to list out not the identities of the donors, but on the IRS form, you got to list out the amounts of any donor that's given 2% or more, for a foundation of this size, 2% or more of the total incoming donations. You've got to aggregate them during the year and give us a number. Well, they've done that under penalties of perjury. They submitted forms that list all those amounts out. And what they don't want us to do now is to know the actual numbers that the government's claim they sent towards the Clinton Foundation. Because when you know those numbers, and I know some of them, what you know is that the government donors sent a lot more money to the Clinton Foundation than the Clinton Foundation has declared. So the question is, what happened to that missing money? Now, until now, and I suppose even now, these donors are reluctant to ask that tough question because the answer that I think is the case is this money has been stolen and diverted and converted to personal gain and used for political purposes. And they don't want to own up to this because the question, the biggest question that, you know, responsible people are going to ask is why has Mr. Schneiderman and why did his predecessor, various predecessors, the current governor, Mr. Cuomo, and before him, Mr. Spitzer, why did they let all this happen? And I think we know the answer. The answer is that powerful Democrats did not want to cross the Clintons in their adopted home state. And, you know, we deserve better than that. I don't speak as, you know, somebody who's a Democrat, and I don't speak actually as a partisan. I speak as somebody who cares about charity. And when foreign governments are sending money into our charities, and in particular into charities connected to powerful political people, we the people have a right to know why they might be doing that. If it is for entirely a good purpose, well, that's great, I suppose. You know, if we've coaxed money from the taxpayers of the UK and France and these Middle Eastern countries, you know, to really help people around the world, that's great. Show us how they're helping. Show us that you are legally constituted to perform all the supposed great work. I need to bring you, Eutrice, if I may, some breaking news. Mark Tapscott, who's a wonderful journalist, worked many places, but he's currently head of the investigative journalism department at the Daily Caller, just put up the story explaining after several weeks of research that this Clinton Foundation has been deceiving the regulators, not in New York, not just in the IRS, but around the world, changing its purpose illegally. And he's citing all the facts and pointing you to that in a great piece you could find online. Guess what just happened? Facebook, having been, you know, called to task recently, one of the Daily Caller people, Tucker Carlson, went to the meeting where Facebook answered, Mark Zuckerberg supposedly answered to his critics who are saying, you know, why are you censoring political content on Facebook? They just censored this article. It's outrageous. Totally outrageous. I mean, it's a factual article. Schneiderman won't do his job. Now Facebook is jumping in here. You know, the facts are stubborn. They're plain. You know, this foundation is not complying with any law. They're above the law. And now we propose to, you know, the people who are watching this, Democrats who allowed the Clinton machine to run roughshod over Bernie Sanders, now think that the rest of us are going to sit by, particularly we independents, are going to sit by and let some machine politic operation, political organization, some corrupt organization install somebody as our president without any real questions being answered. It's outrageous, Eutrice. Outrageous.
I know, and that's why we've been doing this series, to allow people to understand the intimate details, because it is a complicated thing. I mean, you went up against GE and AIG and General Motors. You did the same thing, meticulous examination of the minute details, and you were able to blow the whistle. So when we talk about the Clinton Foundation and we see this labyrinth, the average person, even a seasoned reporter, it would be very, very jarring to take this on, to just follow where the threads would lead, and then to interpret the numbers. Because this is one of the strengths you said you have, that you look at numbers not just as numbers, but as a story being told. The average person, it would take a long time, even for a seasoned reporter, to make sense of numbers the way you are making sense of the numbers. So this is why we are so fortunate to have you here.
I'm delighted to do this. I mean, I'm one of those those people. You know, I'm a labored writer. It takes me a lot of time to get anything written and put together. And but numbers are, you know, basic arithmetic. I'm no, you know, expert on advanced math, but, you know, I can certainly add, subtract, multiply, and divide, which is all you really need to be able to do here. The numbers don't add up. It's as simple as this. The Gates Foundation says they send year by year over $200 million to the Clinton Foundation, and you can add it up in the Gates Foundation filings, which are rigorous and extensive and very well documented, as they should be. It's the largest foundation, I think, in the world. Some pretty smart people or trustees, Warren Buffett, Gates himself. I think Gates' father is involved, his wife. You know, they get those numbers right and they add up. Okay, try to find year by year. I implore the audience, go do the work yourself. Look and see whether on Schedule B, that's the form, it's on the Clinton Foundation website. They're not going to be able, even if they take it off the site now, to take it off out of public domain because you have an absolute right to look at it. Go add up in any year. Try 2009 as one example, 2010 as an example. Add up on the Gates Foundation the numbers that you see going to the William J. Clinton Foundation and various bits and pieces of it. Add that total up. See whether you can find in 2009 a similar number on the Clinton Foundation Schedule B. You won't. The same thing is true from the Children's Investment Fund Foundation in the UK and in the US. You won't find it. Elton John's Foundation, UK, US, won't find it. Various governments, Australia, Norway, Canada, you know, you're not going to find it. Biggest donor, Unitaid. UNITAID, check Annex 1, Annex 3, and all of their financial statements, which are online. They show it year by year, cumulatively, from 2006 to the present. Look for the numbers they say are sent to the Clinton Foundation. Try to find that number in the reports. You won't find it. And, you know, as I have learned in life, and as you can find when you read the gripping accounting memorandum I just here, Considerations of Fraud in Financial Statement Reporting, a publication by the AICPA, the American Institute for Certified Public Accountants, which is online, this thing, you'll see it's a prima facie sign of fraud when revenues don't add up. And the reason for that is most people who run organizations, yes, they watch their expenses, but they really worry about the money coming in, the big revenues. If revenues from your biggest donors, Unitaid's the biggest, Gates Foundation is the second biggest. If year by year those numbers don't match to the Clinton Foundation disclosures, there's a massive problem. And, you know, I don't understand why Unitaid doesn't seem to care about it unless they're an even bigger fraud. I certainly don't understand why the Gates Foundation would just let this ride. I don't believe that they're a fraud. I believe they're pretty careful and do good work around the world. But, you know, this is the kind of blocking and tackling. Now, in my experience as somebody, you know, since 2007-8 dealing with the media, I have found that people in the media, generally speaking, are really good speakers and you know, on television and radio. They tend to be gifted writers. And perhaps it's the case then, you know, when whatever set of higher powers is up there doling out strengths and weaknesses, if you end up with a pile of I can talk and I can write, you may also end up with the inability to not think about numbers too well. So it's not surprising that perhaps the investigative journalist community who writes so well and speaks so well don't really like to think about these pesky tables and numbers, and their eyes glaze over. And I've, you know, in talking to many journalists, famous ones in the business side, even they admit that's the case. So the time has come now for Mr. Greenblatt and, you know, for what calls itself PolitiFact, but what I think should be called PolitiFiction, to get some people who actually understand numbers, some accounting professors, some people who understand the laws, and it's time to take a look at this. It's also time to talk to the people who run charities who have been assaulted by the IRS and assaulted by Mr. Schneiderman's office and the Attorney General's office in the past for infractions that are far less severe than these Clinton Foundation infractions. I mean,
so this brings us back to, in fact, the topic of why is it that they seem impervious, that the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons and the various entities spawned under the aegis of the foundation, they seem to be immune to any kind of official inquiry. I mean, when Greenblatt says in his report that the position by Hillary Clinton and the Clintons, essentially, was that if you want the information, you just have to ask for it. The indication being that, well, maybe Schneiderman has not asked for it, and so the New York State doesn't have the information because, well, they didn't ask for it.
Rubbish. You know, the reaction that I've heard was given to people questioning the Clinton Foundation, journalists questioning the Clinton Foundation, is that the rules that are written down, these laws that do apply to every single charity that does need to register in New York, are just suggestions. That's the way they look at it. They're just suggestions. You know, we're just suggested to follow them. If we don't follow them, you know, maybe the people will prosecute and maybe they won't. That's the attitude they take. Rubbish. Total rubbish. You know, if you look up the rules that do apply to public charities, that's what this is. This is not the Gates Foundation. This is not the Bill and Melinda Gates writing massive checks or giving securities to their own foundation. This is an entity that, while we've been together on air now and since the beginning back in, I think, May, this Clinton Foundation has been regularly soliciting, on the basis of false and materially misleading documents that remain in the public domain uncorrected, using digital media, telephones and mails, wire fraud, mail fraud, ordinarily, as we've mentioned earlier, much smaller entities like Corinne Brown's $800,000 alleged slush fund get sharply dealt with. So the notion that these people in Massachusetts would dare to suggest, that's where they're based, and the communication they had, if they had it on the phone, was across state lines, would dare to say to New York, listen, if you want this thing, which technically we're supposed to supply, you've got to ask for it. Baloney. The form says put the information down. And there are many large charities that do play by the rules. Now, there are others that don't. And as a guest, the Schneiderman defense is going to be, look, you know, we need more money. Our staff is tiny. We can't do everything. But the facts are, I have found examples of charities that do comply with the law. And there's a sweeping overall provision that deals with these public foundations and charities. And that is that you're not allowed to, quote, engage in any, I underscore, any illegal activity. You're supposed to fill out every block of the form. If you don't, the IRS forms, if you want to put in zero, you've got to put a dash or a zero. They haven't done that properly. And they had the gall, the Clinton Foundation did, to say on November 16, 2015, in a press release that was disseminated globally and across state lines, that they had corrected, that they didn't have to change their existing filings, a lie, and that they had corrected all their filings, another lie, and that a lawyer who has not provided any signed document and any background to her opinion to anybody that in the public, that lawyer supposedly said that that was the case, that this lawyer supposedly worked in the Justice Department under President Obama. So we're supposed to say, well, because some lawyer, there's no proof that she actually did actually say this, working for DLA Piper, a great law firm, because this lawyer supposedly said it's okay, you know, get out of jail free card. You know, is that really the way we want to live? That, you know, when one party gets in power, Democrats or Republicans, any supporter of that party automatically gets a get out of jail free card, because that new party comes in power. I don't think that's the way we want to live. I know that's not the way the Constitution is written. And, you know, I think this should be something that gets progressives or people outside the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, together with people outside the Bush wing of the Republican Party and independents, looking at this and agreeing, we can agree that charity fraud is diabolical, particularly when it would appear, as is in this case, that vast sums of money, and we're not talking about thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions or hundreds of millions. We're talking about billions of dollars was sent towards desperate people around the world, and that the Clintons stand up and take credit, as Hillary does and Bill does, regularly for all the great work they've done, when in fact they never controlled this thing properly, never got independent trustees, never got an audit, of legally compliant audit of any part of this thing and have never fully complied with any state, federal, or foreign law. You tell me why that is deserving of praise. I think it's deserving of condemnation. I think that good-minded, fair-hearted people on the right and the left will look at this mess, if they choose to look at this odious, stinking pile of you-know-what, when they look at it, they're going to be horrified, and they're going to say, look, enough is enough. Stop this baloney. Stop scripted press conferences. Stop refusing to answer tough questions. Tell us the truth about the Clinton Foundation. Show us the truth. Show us a real audit. Show us an audit for the period 1997 to 2004. They can't do that. All right? It's not on their website. I have found them. They are on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts website. Other people already have them. They are not legally compliant audits. In fact, they say these audits are prepared using accounting principles which are not allowed inside the United States of America. That's the period when this complex was built out in Little Rock. That's, you know, before it, by 2002 they started straying, but that's the main period when they were doing what they said they were going to do in the first place. That is to be an archive. Okay? Show us those audits. Show us the real application to form this Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc., that was legally created on March 24th, 2004. Show us that complete 1023, if you're so sure you were authorized to fight HIV/AIDS. Show us that. Show us the real merger agreement. Show us how you perfected the merger on December 31st, 2005 in every country where you were operating. Reconcile the donated amounts, donor by donor, that are in the public domain, that are already filed. Reconcile all that. And while you're at it, President Obama, tell us why, after you got into office, your team, after you had access to records you hadn't seen when you negotiated the Memorandum of Understanding, explain to us why you're letting all this slide.
Especially since this involves foreign governments, and it is to be assumed that the function of Secretary of State, former president, presidential candidate, all involved, that this also holds immense import for the United States as well. I mean, these Clintons, through the organization, their foundation, essentially are representing, in a way, the United States. And that, too, has to be put into the equation. We've been talking about the Clinton Foundation and its many tentacles that they formed illegally and operated illegally. But we haven't talked about the other family foundation. What is the relationship that you found, if any, between the Clinton Foundation and the Families Foundation and the transfer or movement of solicited funds?
All right, so what you're talking about there, Utrice, and for your listeners, is the Clinton Family Foundation, which is a smaller organization that I'm not sure when it was established, what year. I believe it is based in New York and also subject to New York law, and that it complies more fully with New York law, save for one point, and that is that the Clinton Family Foundation has given money to the various Clinton Foundations. And you're not allowed to give money to an illegally constituted charity, which the Clinton Foundations are, in my view. So the Clinton family, I believe, has a tax problem with that foundation. What it is that, you know, very wealthy people will set up, rather than just writing a check, you know, or sending securities to an existing charity, they'll set up their own foundation, which has layers of paperwork and expense associated with it. And you'll make a donation to that family foundation in 2016, which will rest there, and you'll be able to deduct it against your 2016 income. And then the foundation can sit on the cash and donate it next year in 2017 or 18. So if it's done properly and organized lawfully, you know, it is a way to manage some tax timing. Now, New York has very high tax rates and limitations on the values of deductions, so it's not necessarily a perfect vehicle. But, you know, it is a way to manage the donations that you choose to make to, you know, establish charities and purposes. And I've looked through those numbers, and it's interesting in those filings that, you know, for their personal stuff, they do manage to file things on time and not necessarily taking the same length of time to get all the filings together. Now, a well-managed company, in the case, and GE is not a well-managed company, but it's a far more complicated enterprise than the Clinton Foundation. Not the family one, the other one. Big one. And most large companies and foundations produce monthly financial statements. They have a very good idea of the situation with regard to their foundation at any moment in time. And what they wait on to complete their audit are the third-party forms that they need to get, which may or may not come in on time. But there really is, for a well-managed foundation, there are very few excuses why, year after year, you would always need to send your information in at the very last minute. And indeed, in New York State, past the final filing deadline. That's something Mr. Greenblatt has not noticed yet, that, you know, many years, the Clinton Foundation has submitted its information past the out date. The statute says thou shalt not submit anything for a calendar filer later than 15 November 2000, whatever, the year after, you know, your calendar year completes. You're not allowed to submit anything in New York yet. Most recently, the most recent filings, that's exactly what they did. And they've done multiple versions that don't make sense, that are not correct, they're not complete, and they haven't corrected them. And they're just thumbing their noses in the face of ordinary Americans and ordinary New Yorkers who do struggle to actually comply with these Byzantine regulations that are put down to try to ferret out fraudsters, try to ferret out people who go around the world and say, I got this project over here, it's going to cost $15 million. And then they take $15 million from Australia and $15 million from Unitaid and $15 million from Canada, $15 million from the Gates Foundation. And don't reveal that they've taken four times the money they need to do a budget that maybe is never actually used. That's why, I'm not saying the Clinton Foundation has specifically done it with those numbers, but that's the offense that I believe the New York State is ordinarily trying to police. They're trying to make sure that when you take money as a foundation from a government, the money goes for its intended purpose. Now, we can dive down a little bit into the detail. When you run a complex foundation, which the Clinton Foundation has become, there's an opportunity. Money's fungible. You know, you go out and you say, I need money for AIDS. You tell somebody else I need it for obesity. You tell somebody else I need it for an endowment. You know, it doesn't necessarily come into different accounts. It comes into a master account, and you don't have to file your annual filings. You don't have to file quarterly. So it comes into the master account. It can be used temporarily for a different purpose, which is illegal. And strictly so under New York law. And New York is trying to police that. And the Clintons, you know, they've never properly explained. You know, it's not just the money came from, let's say, Saudi Arabia to fight HIV/AIDS. Published accounts suggest that, and I think by 2004, Saudi Arabia sent $10 million to the Clinton Foundation for the endowment, not for any other purpose. Well, in 2004, the Clinton Foundation began to fight HIV/AIDS, illegally in my view. So how much of Saudi Arabia's money went to fight for HIV/AIDS, and how much went for the construction of the facility, and how much went for an endowment? Saudi Arabia has a right to know. The public has a right to know. You know, is this a one-time error, or is this a consistent pattern dating from the very beginning on October 23, 1997, when the Clintons were thirsting for money because they were deeply in debt? As by their own admission, they had massive legal bills that needed to get paid, approaching, by public accounts, $10 million or more. They set this thing up, and money comes flying towards the Clintons. What was it used for? You know, that's the essence of what these forms are supposed to tell you. What was this money used for? And the approach that Chai is taking up in Boston and various bits and pieces of the Clinton Foundation, it's as if the people around the Clinton Foundation, likely in connivance with our IRS and regulators, decided this is a massive shell game. It's a massive mess. We're going to try to bury it so nobody will understand it, and we will make it as complicated as possible so that only somebody with time on his hands, you know, might ever be able to get to the bottom of it. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, we still can't move too far away from the central issue, which is, from the very beginning, the foundation was illegally formed because It was formed for the purpose, it was given tax exempt status for the purpose, the stated purpose was to establish a presidential library and research center in Little Rock, Arkansas. But all these other things that started up, these great projects that have been praised by the Clintons mostly, for all the good work that they're doing, which still has not been documented or proven in any quantitative sense, that yes, we have, you know, we hear numbers. For example, we hear numbers about the millions of people helped by the AIDS program. And yet, as we discussed here on this program, there were so many irregularities with it, including the question about the quality of the medications distributed by a firm that had to pay a $500 million fine because it was found to be producing medications that were completely useless. But why is it that we're losing sight of this very central issue? And that issue being the illegal constitution of all these different entities operating under the Clinton Foundation, receiving money for these various endeavors and initiatives that they're doing, allegedly doing, and yet we don't know where the money went, and we still don't know where the money is going. But the central issue here is, isn't that proof enough of an intent to basically establish a kind of Ponzi scheme? That this wasn't just something, I'm trying to say that, you know, some things could happen where you start one thing and it leads to a whole bunch of other things, and that's how that worked. As opposed to somebody coming up with an idea, hey, you know, this is a pretty good idea right here. We could make a lot of money this way. We could monetize philanthropy. We could monetize these good works, sell people on the idea that we are involved now as a former president, as a current secretary of state, as a future president, if that's what is being touted now. And people understanding that on the world's scene, they understand these things as getting close to power, and they will pay for it. They certainly in that world expect a quid pro quo. I'm going to give you a lot of money. I'm expecting something from it, which means that the Clintons move not only from the architects of a Ponzi scheme, but also a kind of, I don't want to use the word treason, but a kind of treasonous activity in which they're selling their clout, which, of course, is a byproduct of people voting for them and installing them in office. You see what I'm getting at? It's like, where do we, who polices that? That level of larceny, that level of crime, where you have the highest levels of government, people in highest levels of government orchestrating these elaborate schemes, but the authorities that should be prosecuting these things are unwilling to do so because they just can't bring themselves to going after a president on these grounds. They would gladly take on a Nixon for, you know, political shenanigans, but this is a whole different kind of crime.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there's a guy I've met, actually, the privilege of meeting, I would consider him a friend, called Jeff Girth, and he's got some guff for the book he wrote, Her Way, about Hillary Clinton, in which he recounted a story of how the Clintons had a 20-year plan, and then it was an extended plan to, you know, first Bill would be president, and then the appointees that he seated in the administration would stay there even after he left, and then Hillary would be president, and the appointees, you get more into the mix there. And then, you know, if Chelsea were interested, the plan evolved to be that she'd become president. And so you ask the question, you know, why would the federal government and why would a guy like Cuomo and others here in New York not go after Clinton, well, they're acolytes of Clinton. There's a Clinton wing of the Democratic Party that is now inserted all over this country. There are people who like the Clintons all over the world. And, you know, this is a case. We talked about it. It's Robin Hood in reverse. It's monetizing your service. I don't want to dwell on the, you know, period, early period, the Clinton period in Arkansas and afterwards up leading up to 1997. But there are, you know, there's a lot written and known through government investigations and otherwise about the Clintons basically using proximity to power, to exact tribute in the form of donations, sweetheart deals from family members, et cetera. This is not, you know, this is not an innocent jaywalker who needs to, or a speeder who's never been pulled over for speeding. I mean, this is a group that, you know, seems to be pretty darn crooked. And when you look, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but when you talk to criminal lawyers, as I have, there's these concepts, the triumvirate, motive, means, and opportunity. What's the motive here? Well, the motive is that to compete in electoral politics, you got to raise money. To do it lawfully for a specific candidate in the election, you got to solicit money that's paid for with after-tax contributions, and you can't go to these foreign governments to finance your political campaign. So the motive in setting up the foundation is that, you know, if you are able to divert money from the foundation to your political campaign directly and indirectly, you are able to, A, get money you might not otherwise get, B, get it in amount you might not otherwise get, and you make it painless for your U.S. donors and other donors who can deduct contributions to foundation. That's the motive. The opportunity here is that, you know, as we discussed, people, the forms, the what you got to look at to figure this out is daunting. So the average investigative journalist who's got a, you know, is working at a publication with declining ad revenue can't do missionary work as Greenblatt did at the Scripps Foundation, and as the good people at the Daily Caller are doing, and other news, and you're doing, most people can't do that. So the opportunity these people have is that they that you know the people who might regulate them are just busy. The traffic cop is blind. The policeman's distracted getting donuts. I mean, there's not no one's looking at this the way they need to look at it. Even Comey decides, the head of the FBI decides not to look at related matters here. And then finally, the means is that it's a relatively trivial exercise here. You know, the regulatory system, the regulators around the world are all thinly staffed. The regulators in Arkansas are a tiny team. They don't have the ability to actually check all these forms outside their home state, outside the country, look at all these numbers, cross-check. They don't have the ability to do that. We know about the IRS. You know, even people, I would guess, on the left are looking at the performance of this IRS aghast, because, you know, if one IRS can target people, as it is alleged this IRS did, then, you know, if that's the thing you want, Mark, you want to lay down, you know, what's good for the goose can be good for the gander. And I don't think that's something we want to do. So this IRS is an IRS which, you know, managed to lose a lot of information, supposedly, which is not cooperating with congressional investigators, where the head of the IRS is potentially facing impeachment. So, you know, that's the means that, that your friends in government are not going to go after you. And that's why you end up with this. And, you know, I would actually flip this a little bit and say something that might surprise you, Trice, and that is that, you know, I'm actually disheartened that the Clintons only would seek in the low billions of dollars for selling whatever influence they've been selling to turn the levers of power in multilateral organizations like the IFC and other things like that. I'm surprised they sold out this cheaply. And I'm amazed they didn't sell out as, you know, other corrupt politicians sell out in the tens of billions and up. So, you know, maybe we still haven't found all the money that went missing.
What do you think is the next step? What would be the next development here from your perspective?
Well, I know because I've been contacted by veteran journalists around the world, multiple countries, people who write books and do movies and are well-connected politically in many countries. I know that that community of investigators is now finally taking a hard look at this. I believe that state governments are starting to look at this. I know the House of Representatives is beginning to look at this. I know the Senate is beginning to look at this. I believe that foreign governments soon will start to look at this. And I hope that the public is starting to look at it. I mean, based on, I did that piece that's on Zero Hedge. And, you know, Zero Hedge is, I commend it to your listeners. It's not for the faint-hearted in terms of, it doesn't cover, you know, Kim Kardashian and how she decided to get dressed today. It does cover topics that are a little bit more tough to get through in finance and economics and whatever. It's definitely snarky. It's anti-establishment, probably from a right-wing perspective, but it's not really a political organization. And they tend to have stories that are 24, 48, 72 hours ahead of the news cycle. And I know what is a good performance for a Zero Hedge story is probably 10,000 views, 20,000 views is quite good. The story that is the subject, I think, in part of this broadcast, before I got on, had 170,000 views. And the community of people who read Zero Hedge are people who have a lot of friends and who talk about stuff like this. And when they get energized, public opinion starts to mount. And I think your listeners are like that, too. I encourage you, don't take my word for this. Read what I've written. Check what I've written. Study what I've written. Go to the source material. See for yourself what I'm talking about. This is the largest unprosecuted charity fraud ever attempted in the United States of America, or for that matter, as far as I know, in the world. Check it for yourself.
And with those remarks, we've come to the end of our program today. I thank you for once again pulling us through this labyrinth. And I believe that it ought to have more attention. It certainly should have more attention, especially in this presidential race, because the reality contrasts so starkly against the PR, the self-praising things that we hear about the Clinton Foundation and all the reputable things that it's doing, and the reality is something completely different. So your expertise has been very, very valuable, which is why essentially I defer to you, because you've studied this. You've devoted almost 2 years now to just going through these figures, and that makes sense to me. So thanks so much for being with us. Tomorrow, let me tell the audience that there will be questions tomorrow, and you'll be available to take questions, and that will be the program. Tomorrow we will use our Free Your Mind time to just ask questions based on the subject matter that we have discussed so far this week. Thanks again, Charles. We'll see each other tomorrow.
Thank you so much, Yatrice.
Thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. It is always a pleasure and privilege to be in your company. And we've been doing this story, concentrating on it, because it is so huge. It's so important to get a handle on. And it boggles the mind that it is occurring as we speak, and there seems to be no movement by any entity to prosecute this, to look at what this really is. What is this foundation doing? What has it been doing? And my main concern, too, is the fact that a lot of the negatives associated with the Clinton Foundation have had incredible impact in the black world. It's amazing what they have done. And we will, of course, be talking about that. But in the black world, the Clintons have wreaked so much havoc and done so much damage that it boggles my mind that here we have two people who should be pariahs in our community. And we see, you know, like right now in this presidential election, you see them being trotted out and literally falling on the sword. to extol the virtues of Hillary Clinton, and then you try to link that with 10,000 people dead, 800,000 infected in Haiti, and we haven't touched on Kenya and Malawi and Papua New Guinea and many other places where the Clintons had their way to incredibly bad results for the people there. And that really affects me. We'll see each other tomorrow. Free Your Mind will be Q&A with Charles Ortel. You can go to his website. Everything that we've discussed is backed up. The documents are there. See for yourself at CharlesOrtel, ORTEL.com. See you tomorrow.
Sure will.
Now if you be true, baby, I won't be the same to you. Now always will love you, baby. Swear it don't matter what you do.